White Network presents the International Jew Study Hour. Reading and commentary on Henry Ford's great classic about Jewish power in America.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and students of the International Jew. We are back after a break over for Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving, you know, is right exactly on Thursday. So I thought since I was taking a week off, I wanted to take that off too. And we're now in the month of December. It's December 5th in 2013. We, meaning me, Carolyn Yeager, and
Hadding Scott.
Yes. And we were just talking about our Thanksgiving festivities, but we won't share them with you. So,
We don't want people to be envious.
That's right. Tonight, you know, Hattie, I think this is a fun chapter. It's not a very long one, so we have plenty of time to chat about it. But it's something that is probably there's a lot that we can say about it because it's the gentle art of changing Jewish names. And that's a topic that a lot of people enjoy. Now, this for the listeners, this is chapter 70. If you follow along with with the International Jew while we do this, any of you. And so, what you want to have it? You have any preliminary remarks, Hattie?
Well, there are a couple of names that they claim belong to Jews that I'm really doubtful about. That's all I can say.
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking, I think it was even last night or something, that, I don't know when it was, but, that this chapter, you know, we really should, maybe all the chapters, maybe I was thinking about the whole book, but, you know, I was reminding myself that they had investigators, and that's probably where a lot of this information comes from, so unless these investigators were just not doing their job very well. But they were looking around trying to find out all this stuff so they would be authoritative in what they were writing here. So it might be, I don't know. I was kind of surprised. I thought some of them would be a little different than what they said, but they probably found people who had changed their names in this way. But we can talk about that when we get to it. So if there's not anything else you want to say?
Not really.
Okay, well then why don't you start reading for us?
All right. So here we are, International Jew, chapter 70, The Gentle Art of Changing Jewish Names. The Medansky brothers, Max, Solomon, Benjamin, and Jacob, have written that their names henceforth will be May.
I love that one.
It is a good old Anglo-Saxon name, but the Medanskys are of Asiatic origin. Elmo Lincoln, a movie actor, comes into a Los Angeles court on the motion of his wife, and it is discovered that he is only Otto Lincolnheld. Now, that's one about which I had doubts, because I could not find any reference apart from the International Jew to Elmo Lincoln being a Jew. I mean, they're not even really saying it here. They just say Elmo Lincoln's not his real name. That's almost his real name. His real name is Otto Elmo Lincolnheld, right? He's slightly changed his name for the movies. I found no indication that he was a Jew. And I'm skeptical about that. You know, a lot of people change their names for movies.
Yes, well, they must have thought he was, but I don't know. I didn't look it up, and I don't
have you looked at Elmo Lincoln? That guy had a barrel chest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if he was a Jew, he was one sturdy Jew.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, there's probably some like that.
Well,
I'm not trying to argue for Elmo because I don't know, but there are some Jews that have big physiques, you know.
A large department store owner was born with the name Levy. He is now known as Litton. It is quite possible he did not like Levy as a name, but why did he not change it for another Jewish name? Or perhaps it was the Jewishness of Levy that displeased him. A popular tenor star recently brought suit against his wife, who married him after allowing him to believe she was of Spanish origin. I understood from her misleading stage name that she was Spanish when I married her. Later, I found that she was Jewish and that her real name was Bergenstein. One of the biggest and best-known stores in the United States goes under an honored Christian name, though every one of the owners is Jewish. The public still carries a mental picture of the good old merchant who established the store, which picture would speedily change if the public could get a glimpse of the real owners. Take the name Belmont, for example, and trace its history. Prior to the 19th century, the Jews resident in Germany did not use family names. It was Joseph the son of Jacob, Isaac ben Abraham, the son being designated as the son of his father. But the Napoleonic era, especially following upon the assembly of the Great Sanhedrin under Napoleon's command, caused a distinct change in Jewish customs in Europe. In 1808, Napoleon sent out a decree commanding all Jews to adopt family names. In Austria, a list of surnames was assigned to the Jews, and if a Jew was unable to choose, the state chose for him. The names were devised from precious stones, as Rubinstein, precious metals, such as Goldstein, Silberberg, plants, trees, and animals, such as Mandelbaum, Lilienthal, Ochs, Wolf, and Löwe, which is lion.
Right.
The German Jews created surnames by the simple method of affixing the syllable son to the father's name, thus making Jacobson, Isaacson, while others adopted the names of the localities in which they lived. The Jew resident in Berlin becoming Berliner, and the Jew resident in Oppenheim becoming Oppenheimer. Yeah, it seems to be German and also Polish city names that Jews frequently have. But maybe Krakow was in Germany, you know, when this happened. Because there definitely are Jews named Krakauer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh,
Krakauer.
Also, Eddie Vedder, the singer of one of those Seattle bands. He's got one of those names.
Vedder? Isn't Vedder used by Jews?
It's V-E-D-D-E-R.
Oh, Didi. Oh,
Vedder itself is the name of a town in Germany.
Oh.
I'm not sure that no Germans have surnames that are just from the place where they, you know, where their ancestors live. There may be a lot of Germans that have those names as well as Jews. You know, not every name that we think of as a Jewish name is seen that way in Germany. There are a lot of Germans named Marx, right? But we always think of Marx as being a Jewish name because we know of Karl Marx and the Marx brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Wilhelm Marx, you know, the social democrat politician, he was mm-hmm. not a Jew.
Where does the Marx name come from?
I don't know, but Karl Marx's family name was really Mordecai.
Yeah.
His father had changed the family name to Marx because it was a German name.
Yeah, so we need to remember that Marx is really not a Jewish name.
It's really not. Although in the USA, most often it is.
Okay, well, there you go. This, you know, I got so angry reading this. Because these Jews, they just have to screw everything up, steal everything from us, cause all this, well, just causes a big problem. And they're running around taking our names, messing around with names, and calling themselves things they don't have, you know, the right to and all, and they get away with it. There's nothing you can do about it. Unless there was rules. I think there were. I think even the National Socialists set up some laws about what names German Jews could have and what they couldn't have?
I don't recall that.
Somebody did somewhere. Okay, I'll have to look that up.
Now, in the region of Schönberg, in the German Rhine country, a settlement of Jews had lived for several generations. When the order to adopt surnames went forth, Isaac Simon, the head of the settlement, chose the name of Schönberg. It signifies in German, beautiful hill. It is very easily Frenchified into Belmont, which also means beautiful hill or mountain. A Columbia University professor once tried to make it appear that the Belmonts originated in the Belmontes family of Portugal, but found it impossible to harmonize this theory with the Schönberg facts. I don't know if that Belmontes family of Portugal has something to do with a town in Portugal called Belmonte. But there's a town in Portugal called Belmonte where there was a community of crypto-Jews that stayed secret for several hundred years and just came out in the open a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw that.
Mm-hmm. It was Belmonte, Portugal. It is noteworthy that a Belmont became American agent of the Rothschilds, and that the name of Rothschild is derived from the red shield on a house in the Jewish quarter of Frankfurt on the Main. What the original family name is has never been divulged. The Jewish habit of changing names is responsible for the immense camouflage that has concealed the true character of Russian events. When Leon Bronstein becomes Leo Trotsky, and when the Jewish Apfelbaum becomes the Russian Zinoviev, and when the Jewish Cohen becomes the Russian Volodarsky, and so on down through the list of the controllers of Russia, Goldman becoming Izgoev, and Feldman becoming Vladimirov, it is a little difficult for people who think that names do not lie to see just what is transpiring. Indeed, there is any amount of evidence that in numberless cases this change of names, or the adoption of cover names, as the Jewish description is for purposes of concealment. There is an immense difference in the state of mind in which a customer enters the store of Isidore Levy and the state of mind in which he enters the store of Alex May. And what would be his feeling to learn that Isidore Levy painted up the name of Alex May with that state of mind in view? When Rosenbluth and Schlesinger becomes the American Mercantile Company, Rosenbluth and Schlesinger becomes the American Mercantile Company, there is justification for the feeling that the name American is being used to conceal the Jewish character of the firm.
Boy, that's so true. It certainly was.
The tendency of Jews to change their names dates back very far. There was and is a superstition that to give a sick person another name is to change his luck and save him from the misfortune destined upon his old name. There was also the biblical example of a change of nature being followed by a change of name, as when Abram became Abraham and Jacob became Israel. And he doesn't say it, but Saul became Paul, right?
Yeah.
Of course, the meaning of Paul is, it means the little man. There have been justifiable grounds, however, for Jews changing their names in Europe. The nationalism of that continent is, of course, intense, and the Jews are an international nation, scattered among all the nations, with an unenviable reputation of being ready to exploit, for Jewish purposes, the nationalistic intensity of the Gentiles. To mollify a suspicion held against them, wherever they have lived, a suspicion so general and so persistent as to be explainable only on the assumption that it was abundantly justified, the Jews have been quick to adopt the names and colors of whatever country they may be living in. It is no trouble at all to change a flag, since none of the flags is the insignia of Judah. This was seen throughout the war zone. The Jews hoisted whatever flag was expedient at the moment, and changed it as often as the shifting tide of battle required. That sounds like the previous chapters where we read about those Jews that were double-dealing during the American Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shifting.
A Polish Jew named Zucker Mandel, emigrating to Hungary, would be anxious to show that he had shuffled off the Polish allegiance, which his name proclaimed, Zucker Mandel. And the only way he could do this would be to change his name, which would very likely become Zukor, a perfectly good Hungarian name. Originally, the Zukors were not Jews. Now, the usual guess would be that they are. It's like with Marx. In the United States, it would be almost a certainty. Such a change as Mr. Zucker Mandel would make, however, would not be for the purpose of concealing the fact that he was a Jew, but only to conceal the fact that he was a foreign Jew. In the United States, it has been found that Jews changed their names for three reasons. First, for the same reason that many other foreigners changed their names, namely, to minimize as much as possible the foreign look and the difficulty of pronunciation, which many of those names carry with them. Second, for business reasons, to prevent the knowledge becoming current that so-and-so is a Jew store. Third, for social reasons. The desire not to appear singular among one's neighbors, when stated in just these words, very easily passes muster as being a natural desire, until you apply it to yourself. If you were going abroad to Italy, Germany, Russia, there to live and engage in business, would you cast about for a changed name immediately? Of course not. Your name is part of you, and you have your own opinion of an alias. The Jew, however, has his own name among his own people, regardless of what cover name the world may know him by, and therefore he changes his outside name quite coolly.
Huh. That's pretty interesting.
The only likeness we have to that in America, is the changing of men's pay numbers as they move their employment from one place to another. John Smith may be number 49 in Black's shop and number 375 in White's shop, but he is always John Smith. So the Jew may be Simon, son of Benjamin, in the privacy of the Jewish circle, while to the world he may be Mortimer Alexander. In the United States, it is hardly to be doubted that business and social reasons are mostly responsible for the changes in Jewish names. The designation American is itself much coveted, as may be gathered by its frequent use in firm names, the members of which are not American in any sense that entitles them to emblazon that name throughout the world. When Moses is changed to Mortimer and Nathan to Norton and Isidore to Irving, as for example Irving Berlin, whose relatives, however, still know him as Izzy, the concealment of Jewishness in a country where so much is done by print must be regarded as a probable motive. Incidentally, Isidore is not—it's not really a Jewish name. It's a Greek name.
Well, it might be, but you find all kinds of Eastern European Jews named Isidore.
Yeah.
So they got it from Greece, I guess. But
I think Isidore may be, itself is like a cover name. It's like changing Moses to Mortimer. Their real name might be Israel, right? So they go by Isidore instead. Isidore means, it's like Apollodorus, Isidorus. It means gift of Isis. Okay. So it's an ancient Greek name.
Well, then they stole it from there.
As a matter of fact, there's a Catholic, very famous Catholic writer named Isidorus of Seville. Mm-hmm. Lee Jackson, in quotation marks, when Mr. Lee Jackson is proposed for the club, there would seem to be no reason, as far as reading goes, why anything unusual about Mr. Jackson should be surmised, until you know that Mr. Jackson is really Mr. Jacobs. Jackson happens to be the name of a president of the United States, which names are quite in favor with the name changers. But in this case, it happens also to be one of the derivatives of an old Jewish name. Yeah, Jack.
Well, Negroes like to take presidents' names, too.
That's true.
They've got just about every one of them, except Eisenhower or something.
Yeah, Rosie.
The early ones.
Roosevelt.
Yeah, I don't know any Roosevelts, but certainly like Monroe and Jackson and Washington and all that.
Jefferson, very, very common.
Oh, yeah. All right, sickening. No, they should have African names as far as I'm concerned. Of course, now when they name their kids with these weird names, everybody complains about it. I don't see why. Let them use those names.
Do you know what? I've noticed that the general trend of Negro naming, you know, given names, mm-hmm. what they're trying to do is, it seems to me, is they're trying to appear to be anything other than the descendants of black slaves. They're trying to appear to be something exotic, is what they're trying to do. So they'll make up some name that they think sounds Spanish or French or Arabic or African. They don't know anything about, you know, those languages, you know, to make up a proper name of that sort, but they try, you know.
Maybe. I thought they just take regular names and then they spell them oddly and they put, you know, change them until they've got them so changed around. One person changes, another person changes from that, another person. You know, they just want to be different and have these oddball names. And I think that's fine. Let them.
Yeah, some of those names are just distorted, though. Like, you know, Tawana, as in Tawana Brawley. Mm-hmm. Al Sharpton made his fame over the Tawana Brawley. Tawana, I believe, it's Tijuana, the city in Mexico.
Well, I don't know.
They didn't
know
how to spell it.
Oprah Winfrey, she's supposed to be named after, what is that, some character in the Bible, and they spelled it wrong? They spelled Oprah wrong, so it's not spelled the same, but just that they can't spell.
Yeah, Ophrah, I believe, is a Hebrew name. The Jewish Encyclopedia contains interesting information on this matter of derivatives. Asher is shaded off into Archer, Ansel, Asherson. Baruch is touched up into Benedict, Benetton, Berthold. Benjamin becomes Lopez, Seif, Wolf. This is translation.
Well, you know, that's that line you have to take out. I took out about 25 of them. It's in between every line now. Same thing. So just ignore it if you've still got it in there.
I'm not sure what you mean.
You're going to find that line repeated and repeated and repeated.
No, not here.
Oh, well, it was in mine the Radio Islam. Oh. It just, it was weird, you know. I had to remove them all, but
yeah,
I thought
Mohammed
that
Rami, maybe Mohammed Rami did some additional research. Ahmed Rami, or whatever his name is.
Okay. All right, we're sorry for that. I thought you were going to have the same thing I did. All right.
Yeah. So the surname David becomes Davis, Davison, Davies, or Davidson. Although, well, that's not, looks pretty Jewish anyway, Davidson. Isaac becomes Sax, Sace, or Sekel. Jacob becomes Jackson, Jacoby, Jacobus, Jekoff, Kaplan, Kaufman, Marchant, and Merchant.
That all comes from Jacob.
Yeah, I guess. Not everybody named Merchant is a Jew, though. Jonah becomes...
That's a good name for them. You'd think they'd pick that out just because they were merchants.
Yeah. Jonah becomes, by quite simple changes, Jones, and Joseph becomes Jonas. Yeah, Jessup is also the same as Joseph.
You know, Jonah is a biblical name.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Jews use it a lot. Is that really a Jewish name?
Well,
I've never seen it. Before.
Jonah Goldhagen wrote that awful book about that.
Oh, God. You know, my one niece named her first son Jonah. And they were just insistent. They loved that name. I didn't like it, but I didn't have any say in it. But he's a wonderful boy, fantastic kid. He's a teenager now. But it's got that name Jonah. Oh, well, I think it's become kind of popular in the U.S.
Yeah, a lot of those Hebrew names are popular the last couple of decades, like Joshua.
Yeah, Joshua became hugely popular. So you don't really connect it with the Jews so much. That's why I was asking, though.
Yeah, not now. It used to be never anybody named Joshua.
That would become hip. Okay, these names. I want to ask you about a name when we get to the end of this list here.
Judah, the true Jewish name, becomes Jewel, Leo, Leon, Lionel, Lion, Leone, and Judith. Levi becomes Leopold, Levine, Louis, and Loi. Moses becomes Moritz, Moss, Mortimer, Max, Mac, Moskin, and Mosse.
Moss. You think, is that like an English name? A people named Moss, could they be English?
I would suppose so. You know, there's this book called Nazi Culture. It was written by a guy named Moss.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a Moss Motors where I live, and they've been in business for a long time. And of course, you know, you wouldn't think they would be Jewish, probably not, but you never know who's going to be Jewish. So, okay, continue.
Solomon becomes Salmon, Salom, Sloman, and Salmuth.
I've never heard of some of these names.
Yeah. And so on through the list of Jewish changelings. Barnett, Barnard, Beer, Herschel, Mann, Mendel, Mandel, Mendelssohn, with various others which are not even adaptations, but sheer appropriations. The millinery business, which is one of the principal Jewish grafts off American women, shows the liking of the Jews for names which do not name, but which stand as impressive insignia. Lucille, Madame Grande, and the like. Reuben Abraham Cohen is a perfectly good name, and a good citizen could make it immensely respected in his neighborhood. But Reuben thinks that the first round in the battle of minds should be his, and he does not scruple at a little deceit to obtain it. So he painted on the window of his store, R.A. Le Can, with an accent mark on the A.
Right.
Which, when set off with a borrowed coat of arms, looks sufficiently Frenchified for even observant boobs among the Gentiles. Among the Gentiles. Similarly, a Mr. Barondesky may blossom out as Barondess or La Baronne. Jesus. Commonly, Mr. Abraham becomes Miller. Why Miller should have been picked on for Judaization is not clear, but the Millers of the white race may yet be compelled to adopt some method of indicating that their name is not Jewish.
Yeah, I think of Arthur Miller. I think mostly when I think Miller, I never think of Jews, and I've known some Millers. And now here, but then it came to my mind, what about Arthur Miller? Is nobody more Jewish than him?
Yeah, my understanding is about half the Millers in the United States are Jews. About half.
Half? Oh, my gosh.
Well, what happened is a lot of Germans whose name was Müller changed their name to Miller, especially around the time of the
first. And that's also, though, a British name for, you know, a Miller.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, a lot of these occupational names are very common with Jews, like Koch, which is cook in German, and Baker is pretty commonly Jewish, I believe.
Yeah, but they weren't Jewish names. They're just that Jews have taken them. There has to be a lot more non-Jews, since there are more non-Jews that have
it. There are other occupational names that are very common with Jews, like Shatner, William Shatner. You know, he's a Jew. And Shatner is a butcher.
Well,
a lot of these occupations.
I don't know. I still think that, you know, there, if you go to Germany, there'd be a whole lot of Shatners, if that's a German word for it.
There might be.
You know, that aren't, because there's just the Jews that have taken it can't add up to the amount of others, yeah. White people. But still, I mean, it's terrible. That's where you see, you can't tell, but that's what they want. They don't want you to be able to tell who they are by their name. That's the point they're making here.
It is conceivable that a Yiddish and an American form of the same name may sometime be deemed necessary. Aarons becomes Arnold. There are a number of Jewish Arnolds. Aarons became Allingham. One Cohen became Druce. Another Cohen became Freeman.
What about Drudge?
Freeman is a very popular one with Jews.
Yeah.
There are a lot of non-Jewish Freemans, too. I used to think Freeman was always Jewish. It's not.
No.
Still another Cohen became a Montague. No, that wasn't even Montague, Ashley Montague, was it?
No.
Not at that early date, probably. A fourth Cohen became a Rothbury. And a fifth Cohen became a Cook.
I think Jews like that name, Cook. Maybe because it comes from Cohen. Cook. I don't know.
Yeah, or Koch, or Koch. Mm-hmm. The Cohens have an excuse, however. In one ghetto, there are so many Cohens that some distinction must be observed. There is Cohen the rag gatherer, and Cohen the Shacket, which is a ritual meat killer, and Cohen the rising lawyer, as well as Cohen the physician. To make the matter more difficult, their first names, otherwise their Christian names, are Lewis. They all have the same first name.
Lewis.
It is not to be wondered at, therefore, that the young lawyer should become Attorney Cohane, which does all the better if thereby certain Irish clients are attracted, and that the young doctor should become Dr. Kahn or Cohn. These are some of the many forms that the priestly name of Cohen takes. Yeah, Cohen, yeah, you know about that priestly.
Yeah, sure, and that's why I'm thinking, that was the highest level of their society. Why would there be so many of them? You know, it wasn't like common to be a priest. So common that there's.
Well,
they were expected to have large families, so they were breeding a lot of Cohens. I don't know.
Well, they probably don't assimilate as much, you know, because Cohens are expected, I believe. If I remember right, they're expected to be Jewish on both sides, right?
yeah, and they're also expected, I think, to have big families. But anyway, there are a lot of Cohens, and so obviously they've taken on all kinds of names.
Yeah,
well, before we go any further, I'm going to ask you about the name Friend. We have talked about the name Friend, even probably on this program. Because I bring it up, you know, and I've been bringing it up lately. So, and you said that you're the one that first mentioned to me that Friend is Jewish, and I looked it up, and it is.
Very commonly.
Very commonly, about half and half. But you also said that you didn't think that, that Germans would take Freund for a name, regular Germans. But obviously some have that name. How do you get a name like that? Why would you pick a name like that?
I don't know.
Would it come from, you know? That's the thing I question. Most of our names, you know, they come from something that, you know, makes sense. But to just pick a name like Friend, it seems like you'd have to just pick it out.
It says, yeah, it looks like self-advertising.
Well, I guess if, at some point, maybe somebody way back when, some, you know, not very, you know, educated people thought they were, other people thought they were a good friend or something. I don't know. They could get that name. That's how you get some of these names. Well, you're, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jews like those self-flattering names like...
Yeah, that's what you always say.
Friendly and good. I mean, there are people named Good that are not Jews, but usually if you see Good or Goodman, that's going to be a Jew.
Well, I don't know if it's usually, but often enough. If you're living in a, if you're living in a non-Jewish area, you might not be, but if you're living in New York City, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The same may be said with reference to Kaplan, a very common name. Charlie Chaplin's name was, in all probability, Kaplan with a C or Kaplan with a K. At any rate, this is what the Jews believe about their great star. Non-Jews have read of Charlie as a poor English boy. And I read in Wilmot Robertson, The Dispossessed Majority, it's a footnote, that Charlie Chaplin actually was in no way Jewish. He allowed people to believe that
he was... Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Because for his career, he thought it would help his career.
Yes, right.
People think he was a Jew.
Chaplin. It is Chaplin. Sometimes I get these people mixed up, but he's the one. And see, now they're saying, the Jews claim him as Jewish. They want to.
Yeah.
And say he even at that time he allowed it to happen, but he isn't really. That seems to be pretty official.
Yeah, according to Wilmot Robertson, he was Irish and French, and 1/8 Gypsy.
There you go. Oh, 1/8 Gypsy. That's why he looks like he does.
There is the Reverend Stephen S. Wise, for another example. He booms his way across the country from one platform to another, a wonder in his way, that such pomposity of sound should convey such paucity of sense. He is an actor, the less effective, because he essays a part in which sincerity is requisite. This rabbi, whose vocal exercise exhausts his other powers, was born in Hungary, his family name being Weiss. Sometimes this name is Germanized to Weiss. When S.S. Weiss became S.S. Wise, we do not know. If he had merely Americanized his Hungarian name, it would have given him the name of White. Apparently, Wise looked better. Truly, it is better to be white than to be wise. But Dr. Stephen S. is a fresh point in the query of what's in a name.
I thought that was pretty interesting. I wonder what they mean by it's better to be white than to be wise. Maybe they think that the name Wise is kind of suspect, but White is not. I think that's probably what they mean. You know.
The list of Jews in public life whose names are not Jewish would be a long one. Louis Marshall, head of the American Jewish Committee, for example, what could his old family name have been before it was changed for the name of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States? John Marshall, right?
Yeah.
Mr. Selwyn's name, now so widely known in motion pictures, was originally Schlesinger. Some of the Schlesingers become Sinclairs, but Selwyn made a really good choice for a man in the show business. A rabbi whose real name was Poznansky became Posner. I think Posners usually are Jews anyway. Like Vladimir Posner, the Soviet propagandist.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, it's a German, Posen, right? It's a German city. You know, Posner means somebody from Posen. It's a typical Jew name. So
yeah,
I don't see
the
that
name of where you're from, right?
I don't see that as a disguise. I don't. He just wanted to appear to be a German Jew instead of a Polish Jew, apparently.
Right.
The name Kalin is usually an abbreviation of Kalinsky. A true story is told of an East Side tinsmith whose name was very decidedly foreign Jewish. It is withheld here because the Dearborn Independent prefers, in this connection, to mention only the names of those who can take care of themselves. But the tinsmith moved to a non-Jewish section and opened a new shop under the name of Perkins, and his luck really did change. He is doing well, and being an industrious, honest workman deserves his prosperity. So this is a Jew that turned over a new leaf.
Well, he moved into a non-Jewish section.
He moved away from the other Jews.
Yeah, they didn't want them to know he was Jewish, and
start a new life.
His family probably eventually, they may have become Christians and just forgot all about being Jewish eventually.
Yes, he's got joy, 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 joy down in his heart.
Okay.
Of course, there are lower uses of the name-changing practice, as every employer of labor knows. A man contracts a debt under one name, and to avoid a garnishee, quits his job, collects his pay, and in a day or two attempts to hire out under another name. This was once quite a successful trick, and is not wholly unknown now, although probably very hard to do these days with social security numbers.
Oh, yeah, you can't do that anymore. I don't think so.
There is also much complaint among the stricter observers of the Jewish ritual requirements that the word kosher is greatly misused, that indeed it covers a multitude of sins. Kosher has come to signify, in some places, little more than a commercial advertisement designed to attract Jewish trade. For all it means of what it says, it might just as well be the best place in town to eat, which it isn't, of course, and neither is it always strictly kosher. It must be conceded, however, that the tendency to mislabel men and things is deep set in Jewish character. Jews are great coiners of catchwords that are not true, inventors of slogans that do not move. There is a considerable decrease in the power they wielded by such methods. Their brilliancy in this respect is running to seed. This may be explained by the fact that there are so many song titles to write for the Jewish jazz factories, and so much snappy matter for screen descriptions. They're using up all their inventive ability in making up jazz song titles
and movie advertisements.
Yeah. Okay. Brain drain there. Strain on their intellect. Their comeback is painfully thin and forced. Without peers in dealing with a superficial situation like a dispute over the beauty of two rival stars, or the amount and method of distributing confetti, they are the veriest dubs in dealing with a situation like that, which has arisen in this country. Dub is a klutz.
Okay. Well, you know, I think that's very important. Their tendency to mislabel men and things, they say it's deeply set in the Jewish character. They want to confuse everybody else. They mislabel things. They give things other names. That's deep in their character. They've been doing it, I guess, from day one.
Yeah, they haven't even gotten into the names taken by Murano Jews. You know,
yeah, well, let's not do. Let's not
Sephardic Jews very often have names with a strong Christian connotation, like Cruz, mm-hmm. Cruz, which is cross. Mm-hmm. Immediately upon the appearance of the Jewish question in the United States, the Jews reverted naturally to their habit of mislabeling. They were going to fool the people once more with a pat phrase. They are still seeking for that pat phrase. Slowly they are recognizing that they are up against the truth, and truth is neither a jazzy jade nor a movie motto, which can be recostumed and changed at will. This passion for misleading people by names is deep and varied in its expression, chiefly due to Jewish influences. We are giving the name of liberalism to looseness. We are dignifying with names that do not correctly name many subversive movements. We are living in an era of false labels, whose danger is recognized by all who observe the various underground currents which move through all sections of society. Socialism itself is no longer what its name signifies. The name has been seized and used to label anarchy. Judaistic influence creeping into the Christian church has kept the apostolic labels, but thoroughly destroyed the apostolic content. The disruptive work has gone on quietly and unhindered, because often as the people looked, the same label was there, as the same old merchant's name stays on the store the Jews have bought and cheapened. You know, I think that's the main reason why Britain still has a monarchy, so the people won't realize how much things have changed.
That's interesting.
Thus, there are reverends who are both unreverend and irreverent, and there are shepherds who flock with the wolves. Zionism is another misnomer. Modern Zionism is not what its label would indicate it to be. The managers of the new money collection, millions of it, badly used, badly accounted for, are about as much interested in Zionism as an Ohio Baptist is in Meccaism. For the leading so-called Zionists, Mount Zion and all that it stands for has next to no meaning. They see only the political and real estate aspects of Palestine, another people's country just at present. The present movement is not religious, although it plays upon the religious sentiments of the lower class of Jews. It is certainly not what Judaized orators among the Christians want the Christians to think it is. Zionism is at present a most mischievous thing, potentially a most dangerous thing, as several governments could confidentially tell you. But it is all a part of the Jewish practice of setting up a label pretending one thing, while quite another thing really exists. Take anti-Semitism. That is a label which the Jews have industriously pasted up everywhere. If ever it was an effective label, its uses are over now. It doesn't mean anything. Anti-Semitism does not exist, since the thing so named is found among the Semites as well. Semites cannot be anti-Semitic. When the world holds up a warning finger against a race that is the moving spirit of the corruptive, subversive, and destructive influences abroad in the world today, that race cannot nullify the warning by sticking up a false label of anti-Semitism. Any more than it can justify the sign of gold on a $1.50 watch, or the sign of pure wool on an $11.50 suit of clothes. So, with the whole group of labels, which the Jews have trotted out like talismans to work some magic spell upon the aroused mind of America. They are lies, and when one lie fails, how quickly they hitch their hopes to another. If anti-Semitism fails, then try anti-Catholic. That might do something. If that fails, try anti-American. Get the biggest talent that can be hired for a night on the B'nai B'rith platform to shout it. And
okay, we've only got 3 minutes, Hattie.
When that fails, as it has, the American Jewish Committee is itself a misnomer. The committee is not exclusively American, and its work is not to Americanize the Jews, nor even to encourage real Americanization among them. It is a committee composed of Jews representing that class which profits most by keeping the mass of the Jews segregated from Americans and in bondage to the higher-ups among the Jews. They are the big Jews, as Norman Hapgood used to call them, who say to the little Jews, "You hang closely together. We will be your representatives to these foreign peoples, the Americans and others." If the American Jewish Committee would change its name to this, the Jewish Commission for America, it might be nearer the truth. It has dealt with America in the recent past very much as the Allied commissions deal with Germany. There are certain things we may do and certain things we may not do, and the Jewish Commission for America tells us what we may and may not do. One of the things we may not do is to declare that this is a Christian country. There is one absolutely safe rule in dealing with anything emanating from the American Jewish Committee. Don't rely on the label, open the matter up. You will find that the Kehillah is not what it pretends to be, that the Jewish labor union is not what it pretends to be, that Zionism is a camouflage for something entirely different, that the name and the nature are nearly always different, which is the reason for a particular name being chosen. It runs all the way through Jewish practice and presents another little job for the Jewish reformer.
Well, we've got right at the 60-minute mark, you stopped. That's very good. This is from November 1921. I think this is a very strong ending. You know, they always manage to do that most of the time, I think. And while the chapter may not have been the most important one, but it is important what they do with names. But I think this whole idea that that they're trying to tell us what to do and that we need to open these matters up and look deeply inside, and yet that still is not being done. That's what needs to be done, right, Hedding?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be talking more about this because I'm kind of in this right now, but, we let too many things go by, but there's so much to do, you know, I realize, and there's so few people. Well, that's it. Come back again next week.
Thanks for listening. The International Jew Study Hour will return next week, exclusively on the White Network.